Welcome to a presentation entitled The Ten Commandments of Dating. I'm not sure there are actually ten commandments, but it's a catchy title, and I have actually formatted this in the version of Ten Commandments. But as an introduction, I just want to state, not that I'm not as familiar with the territory here as I am in New York, where I live now for 20 years, I would say the following. Society at large is fast losing its confidence in the institute of marriage. And it's not without good reason. It's not without a certain justification that the single scene, generally speaking, has good cause for, I don't want to use the word fear, but perhaps hesitation, and being extra cautious in the dating process. There are many variables involved in understanding why that is so. I'm only going to mention briefly just three, and I wouldn't say that they're necessarily the main ones, but I would just mention three. Number one, the divorce rate is obviously much higher than it has been in decades. I remember even growing up myself as a teenager, to hear of divorce in the secular Jewish community was unusual. So today, with the divorce rate as it is, it's not surprising that our single scene should be that much more cautious entering the dating process. Number two, many times I'm not so impressed by my own parents' marriage that when I enter the dating process, I may not have the same confidence that I'm going to make it through. And even though my parents may have held out in their marriage, I might not be so enamored by the way they deal with their differences that I myself may enter with certain hesitation slash fears slash not violence, just it's a sign in English grammar. Then, and in which case, I'm going to, so to speak, be that much more careful in the dating process. And number three, sometimes we see our own peers enter marriage and they themselves are struggling. And not necessarily happy, especially in the first few weeks, months, years, in establishing the relationship, that also can help feed into my own fear and hesitation of entering the marriage process, and that might be a subconscious hesitation. So, in a certain sense, I just want to lay this down as, if you like, a foundation for why there's good reason, understandable, perhaps even justified reasoning, for why it is that we have such a large single scene. I don't know how it is in London, if that really is the case. I know in America we're talking about hundreds and thousands of singles in the Jewish single world that are still struggling in the dating process. So I'm going to end off with one more point. I'm going to enter the Ten Commandments. And that's the following. In most areas where we get more and more practice, we end up being better at that item. In dating, I'm not sure if it really works that way. That the more people we date, we would expect the more clarity we would have, not only just in the dating process, but in what we're looking for in a marriage partner, and yet often that is not necessarily the case. That the more dates we go on, the more confused we are. And that is a little bit concerning, because the question then begs, well, what am I looking for in the dating process? Do I actually know myself with some level of clarity? What is it I'm looking for? Not just in the other person, but what is my purpose in the dating in the first place? And even though we might answer that very simply, well, I want to date to the point that I feel comfortable and confident this is the right person I want to marry and stay married to for the rest of my life, nevertheless, I would say that without a clarity of direction, it's possible for me to have many, many dates with a variety, a full spectrum of different types of people, and yet not necessarily come out with more clarity as to what I'm looking for in a partner and for myself. So let's begin with commandment number one. Thou shalt remember the purpose of dating. What do I mean by that? So I'm going to ask you for your help over here. What are we looking for in the dating process? What is the purpose of dating?
Yeah.
Marriage?
Companionship.
Companionship. Excellent. Any other suggestions? Are those still awake? What else? What are we looking for in the dating process?
Compatibility.
Compatibility.
See if you have the same goals.
similar or same goals?
Love.
Love?
Same values.
Same values. We'll talk about love in much more detail in the next lecture. Same values.
All of these things are just so you can get married.
Okay, all of these are preparation to get married.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's already said it, hasn't it? Covered all those.
Okay, possibly. So in other words, we don't have to add anything more to this list.
That's really what we're looking for, isn't it? Isn't that the answer? Well, we're looking to get married.
Yes, that's what we're definitely talking about in terms of the ultimate goal of this discussion. Now, I'm not sure if there's an equal number of men and women here tonight, so how are you going to... Never mind. So, we're definitely looking for marriage as the ultimate goal, no question about that. And in that process of identifying who it is I want to be married to for the rest of my life, what ingredients are we looking for that will help me say, this is the person I want to be married to? So we've got similar goals, similar values, companionship. Anything else you want to add?
Long-term aspirations.
Long-term aspirations?
Jewish.
Jewish? One fanatic in every audience. Okay. Jewish?
The ability to remain sane.
Sorry?
The ability to remain sane.
Okay, ability to remain sane. It's a difficult question to ask in the dating process, but yes. We want to feel that this is a person that is emotionally strong. Here's where I'm going with this. I think the essential ingredients in what we're looking for are really the same for every person. We're going to talk about this in more detail in the next lecture, which is much more focused on when is love real. Not only in the dating process, perhaps, but more importantly, in any love relationship, whether it's music I love, whether it's culture, art, sports, soccer. Actually, I don't think I'm saying sports, just say soccer. Whether it's a love relationship in marriage itself, loving our children, to try and get a real handle on what is real love, and then understand what the long-term ingredients of love. But essentially, I'm looking for right now, what are we looking for in the dating process that we can identify, this is helping me reach the purpose of dating, which is marriage?
Happiness.
Happiness.
Soulmate.
Soulmate, okay. Here's the list I'm looking for, and everything that you've said is definitely on the list.
Physical attraction.
Excellent. Essentially, we're all craving for the exact same items in relationships. Money. Practical, I agree. You want financial responsibility. If you actually had a choice between marrying someone with a lot of money versus someone who's got strong financial principles which govern their decisions in earning and spending, saving, which would you say is more likely a guarantee for financial stability? A lot of money or making our decisions based on financial responsibility?
Depends how much is a lot of money. mega. Yeah, that's probably the criteria, isn't it?
I don't know the statistics in England. In America, those who win over $100 million...
That'll do.
Yeah. 86% of them have lost most or all their money within 5 years. A gentleman who recently won, he was a parking attendant, won $149 million. Within 2 weeks, he was in court with his wife of 20 years of marriage going through a divorce. So there's a price to be paid when a person's not prepared for extreme wealth. So my question to you, which is a greater guarantee for enjoying one's wealth, maintaining one's wealth? Is it the amount of money I have in my life, or is it how I earn and spend it, save it?
The latter.
It's really the latter. You ask your parents, ask your grandparents, we can get that into a separate conversation. But yes, I agree, financial responsibility is probably on the list. What are the items that are essential, that we cannot do without, that we are looking for in the dating process, and therefore, if you like, we're looking for in the spouse that we're hoping to choose, hoping to be married to for the rest of our lives?
They have to be the opposite sex.
That definitely helps. I believe that statistics are on your side. Okay, so we've got Jewish, opposite gender. Okay, those are important. I'm not sure you can take those for granted nowadays. If you had to give a rating of respect on for a 0 to 10, 0 is the least, 10 is the most, what would respect score on your charts for long-term loving relationship?
10.
On a 0 to 10 scale, what would respect score? 10. 10 or more. What would appreciation score on a 0 to 10 scale? 10. What would sensitivity score on a 0 to 10 scale? What would loyalty score? Ladies, help me with this. What would admission of one's mistakes score on a 0 to 10 scale? What would gratitude score on a 0 to 10 scale? What would love score? We have to get a definition for love. What would love score?
11.
Thank you. You break the scale. What would personal health, a person taking care of their health physically, what would that score on a 0 to 10 scale? There are a lot of items we're looking for that are essential in every relationship, every marriage. But the real goal, which I agree is ultimately marriage, the real goal in the dating process is not so much to look for the right ingredients in every potential date as it is to discover who am I in the dating process. I'll repeat myself. Greater than the purpose of finding the right person in the dating process is to learn more about me. I'll explain. We're not in this world to find ourselves. We're in this world to create ourselves. The people that raised us did not shape us. Our educators, our schools did not shape us. They help reveal us to ourselves. Different and difficult people, different and difficult situations don't shape us. They help reveal ourselves to ourselves. So that when you squeeze me, whoever you are, my spouse, my child, my boss, my co-worker, my friends, my mother-in-law, just swallow, sorry. My father, my brother, my sisters, my sibling, whoever it is that I encounter in my life, the people that I date, whoever is not the same as I am, is not similar all the time, is different, and often difficult to get along with, they are not there to hurt me, they are there to squeeze me, in order, that may not be their real intent, but that's what really happens, they're there to help me reveal myself to me. The dating process is more importantly about me learning about myself. Why is that important? Here's where I'm going to go with this, because it's probably the most important point I'm going to make the whole evening. Who I marry is less important than who I am entering the marriage. Because who I marry is much less of what I can control in the marriage process than who I am in that relationship. Who I marry is less important than who I'm becoming in the marriage and who I am in the marriage in terms of what I give to that person and give to myself. How much am I there for them on a level of appreciation, even when I don't always feel appreciated by them? How empathic will I be of their sensitivities, their joys and difficulties? Or will I be disappointed when I see them with their human frailties, weaknesses, inconsistencies? Will I be judgmental or will I be patient? How kind, generous, considerate, thoughtful, loving, appreciative, grateful, respectful, long list! Who I am entering marriage is far more important than who I marry. And here's the real bottom line. You can go to sleep after this if you care to do so. Here's the real bottom line. I'm going to ask for a quick show of hands, if you don't mind. How many people in this room are married or have been married? Okay, so there's a few people in this room. So I'm going to ask you for an honest, you don't have to share, but I'm going to ask you the following question. Is the person you marry the same person you'll stay married to a week, month, year later? I mean, of the same spouse, but I mean, are they the same person? Or do they change?
They change.
Let me ask you, is there anyone in this room, singles included, Is there anyone in this room who would say, I am the same person today as I was a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago? Is there anyone? Do you expect to be that same person as you are today, 1 year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now? See, my point is the following. Who you marry is not who you stay married to. I don't mean because you go into another marriage. I mean the person you marry is not going to remain the same person you're married to, and you entering the marriage is not going to be the same person 1 year, 2, 5 years down the line. Less important, and I know this probably sounds revolutionary at first, but we're going to go through this with the rest of the commandments, we'll see the uniting theme. Less important than who I marry is who am I entering the marriage. The real purpose of dating is to help me reveal me to me. So that during the dating process, how sensitive am I to differences? How kind am I to the differences? And how generous, considerate, loving, appreciative, grateful am I of the virtues, qualities that I do notice in the other person I'm dating with? Essentially, every person, whether they like it or not, is really a salesperson. We are all selling ourselves. By default. All the time. If you're a parent, in that role, you're selling yourself to your child. And the extent to which you, so to speak, succeed in selling yourself with your values, yourself with all your sensitivities, your outlook on life, on how to deal with people, on how to get along with immediate family, extended family, how to get along with a not always easy father-in-law, mother-in-law, in front of your children, who you are is who you're selling to your child in terms of the role model of how to get along with people in life. And the extent to which I'm successful will largely be hanging on one simple point, value. What does that mean? The extent to which I'm valuable to my child, valuable in this state, valuable in this marriage. The extent to which I'm valuable for the company I work for, it's the same exact formula in any relationship. The more valuable I am, and we'll define that in a few moments, the stronger the chances are that this relationship will work for long term. What do I mean by that? A company is downsizing. Who are the first ones to go?
Unimportant people.
People who are unimportant. What's the definition of unimportant in any company?
Replaceable.
In that sense, the least valuable. The more value you bring to your company, the less chance you have, obviously, of being downsized. The more value you bring in terms of your resources, your talents, your database of information of different departments of the company, the more valuable you are in any relationship, the stronger is the chance that that relationship will have a longer lasting effect. The more valuable I am as a parent to help my child become independent, to teach trust, to teach self-esteem to my child, the more valuable I am in the parenting process, the more I have sold myself to my child so that in the long term, even as a teenager, believe it or not, my kid might still come to me and talk to me and ask me questions and seek guidance because in the earlier years, there was an investment of trust, of confidence, of believing in this child's ability to process information and come to a decision themselves. And in helping them learn that process, we as parents become more valuable. Am I making this clear? In the dating process, here's what's most important. And this brings us to commandment number 2. Thou shalt learn one new lesson about thyself from each date. More important than me gathering information about you in the dating process is me learning about me. What do I mean by that? If I keep a simple journal of one line messages per date for me to review. Now some people go on a lot of dates. Some people have been on hundreds, some people even been on thousands of dates, literally. More important than who I meet during the date is what did I learn about myself? And what do I mean by that?
Are you suggesting taking notes on the date?
No. No. I used to work for Saatchi & Saatchi. They were the biggest advertisers in the world. So it was very interesting that there are a few formulas that they kind of legislated that have become the norm in good advertising. And they are so powerful that it teaches a person the distinction, the difference between manipulation and honest interest and honest selling of value. There's a company, I don't know if you have it in England, there's a company in American Canada called SlimFast. Are you familiar with that? So, believe it or not, even though my background as a rabbi is much more in yeshiva, my background in advertising, working with my father, who was the best in the world in the film business, the film industry, in dubbing, that was revoicing movies and commercials. He did all the old Bond films. Some of you remember Sean Connery and Roger Moore? So all the Bond films, he was the director of all the voiceovers. I'm not saying that to impress you, just to share with you that when I worked in advertising, just a few weeks ago I was in Toronto, I was speaking to the marketing company of SlimFast, because one of the two partners, Danny Abraham and his partner, his brother, Jerry, had heard me speaking in Florida a few months ago about advertising in the context of Jewish education. And they asked me to come speak to their own marketing company about my experiences in advertising to help them identify what they're really looking for in the sale value of their product to their customer. So here's what I want to share with you in this area. Once I identify what my value is in the dating process, the sale is much easier. And I'm not talking about manipulation here. There's a big difference between selling true value and selling perceived value. True value is what is accurate and honest about the value of that product. In this case, we're talking about ourselves. We are that product, so to speak. Forgive me for using this analogy, but I think it's a very apropos one. The difference in the manipulation that exists in advertising, which I might touch upon either later in this presentation or certainly in the love presentation, the manipulation there is to sell perceived value, not necessarily true value. And that's where the customer, the consumer, is easily taken for a ride. And in this analogy that I'm offering now, if I sell perceived value to my date, then the person I'm selling in the real marriage is not the real person. And they're going to be fooled. And I may be fooling myself too. What we're talking about here in Thou Shalt Learn Something New About Oneself from Every Single Date means to expect to notice a different level of sensitivity that I am employing in the dating process, a different level of listening. How important is listening? Ladies, help us with this. How important is listening on a 0 to 10 scale? What would it score? Gentlemen, don't fall asleep on this one. What number would you score?
Two.
That's why I'm asking the ladies. What will it score? What will listening score on a 0 to 10 scale in a marriage, in a relationship? 10. Is there anyone who wants to say less than that?
You have to hear the perception of
it. Then we're in deep trouble. Chaim and Becky, we're in the kitchen, and Chaim wanted to prove to his wife that she really was hard of hearing. And so from the end of the kitchen, he calls out to her, "Becky!" No answer. So he walks 10 steps closer, "Becky!" No answer. He goes right up behind her, says, "Becky!" And she turns around, "Kai, for the third time, what do you want?" Perceived listening is not real. We want to be real listeners. What does real listening mean? Help me. What does real listening really mean? Interest for the sake of wanting to
understand.
Whether you're sharing something that's joyful to you or something that's a challenge to you in a difficult way, real listening means I desire to honestly understand. Not about manipulation, not so that, because then it's, I'm not interested in you, I'm interested in you being interested in me. That's not real interest. Every date, I should be looking at myself in terms of, am I becoming more valuable as a listener? Am I honestly fascinated by the other person's interests? I don't have to agree to your interests, But am I honestly interested in what you're interested in just for the fact that it gives me pleasure to see another person describe what they're passionate about? Is this making sense? You follow the point? The more honest I am in listening, in taking an honest interest, being fascinated by what you enjoy the most, emotionally honest, feeling uninhibited to be honest with myself, not about everything about myself, but gradually to be more emotionally honest about myself, so that the relationship becomes one that's safe. Safe means you feel comfortable to share your real self with me. I feel honestly comfortable to share my real self with you. So that barriers start to fall away, and the more honest we are about each other, the pluses and the minuses, the more real the relationship will be, even in the dating process. Dating is more about me discovering myself. Am I becoming a better me so that I'm increasing the value, not just for the marriage itself, but for who I'm becoming, for a person, for a father, for a mother, for a spouse, in the workplace. Who am I becoming? The purpose of dating is for me to become a better me. One of the ways to do this is the power of questions. What is the power of questions? Let me share with you. The way we ask questions has a tremendous power. I'll explain. What's the difference between saying, you know what, I'll just never lose weight. Why can't I ever lose weight? Why can't I ever lose weight? What's the answer to that question? Listen carefully. What's the assumption in my question? Why can't I ever lose weight?
Your heart's not in losing weight.
That what?
Your heart's not in losing weight.
Well, my heart, even if my heart isn't losing weight, what's the question assume if I say, why can't I ever lose weight?
Negative.
It's negative, and the assumption is I'm not actually going to. Why can't I be a loving spouse? Why can't I be a more respectful parent? Why can't I be more sensitive to other people? Listen to the way I'm phrasing the question. The way I phrase the question to myself is sending my brain to the answer to that question. What's the answer to my question, why can't I lose weight? Well, there's probably a few answers. Well, I'm a slob. I'm out of control. I just can't say no to chocolate. As you know, actually, I wasn't sure if I was going to make it tonight, because 2 nights ago I was still in New York, and they just released me after 3 months in chocolate rehab. And this is a very interesting place. Why are you laughing? Because I'm joking. Fine, okay. No, in chocolate rehab, it's a very interesting place. Right in the corner where I was, there was a gentleman who was meditating day and night. And after 3 months, I just had to find out what on earth he was saying. So as they released me, I went up to him, put my ear right up to his mouth. And here's what he was saying. He said, God, if there's no chocolate in heaven, I'm not going. Anyway, no, you meet very interesting people there. But let's say, my answer to my question, why can't I ever lose weight? Why can't I ever follow through on an exercise program? The assumption is I cannot and I'm not able to. It's all negative. Is that the real question I want to be asking? Because my brain gets sent to the wrong answers that don't support me. What I really mean to ask is, how can I lose weight? Perhaps even better question would be, how can I lose weight and actually enjoy losing weight? How can I be more valuable to my company, as opposed to, how come I just can't hold a job? How is it that I just don't seem to have staying power? And my brain starts searching for all the negative reasons why. Which, if I'm strong enough to analyze and learn from, I might be able to go there. But most of us are much better off looking for asking the question that supports what we really want from the answer. The question I really want to ask is the following. I wonder what I will learn about myself from tonight's date. What am I setting myself up for? What am I doing to my brain when I say, I wonder what interesting, fascinating aspects about the other person I'm going to learn about that I didn't know about others in tonight's date? What am I doing to my brain? For those still awake.
Shutting down self-reflection.
I'm shutting down?
Self-reflection.
Shutting down self-reflection? If I say, I wonder what I'm going to learn about myself tonight, going through this date, what am I doing? I'm setting myself up for the right answers. I'm looking in a sense that I'm not just looking to discover the good in the other person or the good in me. I'm expecting to find the good in others and in myself. What's the difference between looking for and finding? Big difference. If I'm just looking for the right partner, that's totally different than if I'm on a campaign to find the right partner. If I'm just looking, wondering, that's one level. But if I'm expecting, that's totally different. What's the difference between hoping and expecting? Big difference. You know, in Hebrew, the word, unfortunately, for hope is translated kaver. It's the wrong word. The word hope doesn't exist, as far as I know, in the Hebrew language. The word kaver, correctly translated, is expect. Kaver means mikveh. When a person goes into a ritual bath, they don't hope to come out spiritually clean, they expect to. Expectation is a totally different concept than hoping. If I say, I hope I'll lose weight, I hope I'll be a good spouse, I hope I'll have a good date, as opposed to, I expect to lose weight, I expect to be a good spouse, I expect to be a good father, expect to be a good mother, I expect to give my all on this job. What's the difference between hoping and expecting? Is it just semantics? Listen to the way we're selling ourselves in the selling process. I'm setting myself up to expect to find the answers that I'm really looking for. If I'm looking for, I wonder what I'm going to see that's wrong tonight in this state. What am I setting myself up for? I wonder what insensitives I'm going to discover about who I'm meeting tonight. I wonder how ugly they're going to be. Yeah. When I set myself up for the negative, that's where I'm sending my brain to search for the answers. If I say, why can't I lose weight? I'm sending my brain to find answers to that question. Whereas if I say, how can I lose weight? I wonder what I will learn about myself about this date. I wonder how much more sensitive I will notice about myself on this next date. I wonder what virtues I will notice in the person I'm dating tonight that I didn't notice on the first date. We're setting ourselves up to look for what we're really looking for. Number three, thou shalt love your date. I really have to clarify this point. We are actually commanded in the Torah, and this has universally been adopted by Christianity and other religions, Ve'ahavta kamocha, Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18, love your neighbor as yourself. This is a very popular command. Actually, we do have a problem with this, if you think about it. See, if I'm supposed to love you as much as I love myself, well, what happens if I hate myself? How much do I have to love you now? If I'm suicidal, how much do I have to love you now? We have a problem. You hear that? So what does it mean? Love your neighbor as yourself. I have a command to love every single date. We're going to go into much more detail on this particular aspect, love, in the next presentation. But suffice to say the following. Don't look for the good in every potential person you meet. Find it. Big difference. If I'm looking, maybe I'll notice, maybe I won't. But if I'm finding, then what's the assumption?
Search much further.
I'm going to search much further.
Assumption is that it's there.
It's there! I'm not just searching, maybe it's there, maybe it's not. I'm on the assumption it is there. I'm going to expect to find virtue in the other person. And we're going to talk about this in much more clarity in the next presentation, because love, I think you agree, in today's society is simple or complex. It's very complex. But we're going to look in the short 40-50 minutes available to us on the subject tonight to come out with a new clarity that will help us understand ourselves in the love process, where I think everyone in this room, there's someone that we deeply love in our lives. Could be parents, could be immediate family, could be a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a spouse, or ex-spouse, could be a child, whoever it is that we have deeply loved or do deeply love, or it could be sports, it could be chocolate, it could be so many different things in our lives that we have experienced love. And sometimes it's not always clear to me what are the mechanics that turns on that love and helps me understand how could I fall out of love. When I was so sure I was in love, how can it suddenly just, how does it switch out of love? What is that switch? What is the mechanic that governs that switch that turns it on, turns it off? Very important to look for that. But suffice to say at this point, I'll take your question in just a moment, that the command that I shall love my date means look/find virtues and qualities in the other person. And one of those virtues and qualities is the exact items that you began to list at the beginning of this presentation. Compatibility, similar goals, similar values. And then the other items we mentioned, respect, appreciation. And to not just look, but find that in every potential date. So you have a question?
Yeah,
A comment?
Yeah, I hope not to be jumping ahead. Just listening to what you said.
Yes.
I've read also a few books on religious dating, and I know it's all about giving and everything. And it seems to me that you're, from the way the talk is structured, it's almost like you're saying you can actually marry anybody, because it's all about how good you are as a partner. But I mean, surely, obviously, it's much easier to give if you find someone you're compatible with, as compared to somebody who's completely different from you, which completely different life goals, and somebody you don't actually deal with.
Excellent. Your name, sir?
David.
David's point is the following. I'm making it sound like that since the most important person in the dating and the marriage formula is myself, then surely it almost makes no difference who I marry. So I definitely agree with you that I do want to look for a what we might call a foundational base of Jewish, opposite gender, and any of the other items that are extremely important to you. However, I do agree with your accusation that in essence what I am saying is that who we are is really the key, because the person we will marry will not stay that same person. We will discover very quickly. And you know what, I'm going to put it to you this way. Imagine you are so clear about what you're looking for in your date, and you've got a list: compatibility, similar or same goals, similar or same values, and everything else that you could possibly imagine. Healthy, wealthy, responsible with money, kind, considerate, sensitive, loving, grateful, appreciative, respectful, giving, generous, able to admit one's mistakes, emotionally honest, and the list goes on. Let's just imagine, I'm just going to play this game for a few seconds. Imagine you go on a date, and underneath the table you've got your blackberry, that was just so addictive. So you got your blackberry under the table, and let's say it's just wirelessly attached to your brain, so that you send messages to your blackberry, and it gets recorded there, and you've got your list under the table. Compatible, kind, generous, similar goals, similar values, etc. And you're meeting someone tonight, and you cannot believe this. You've got this rating system, 0 to 10. And on every single item that you are looking for in Miss Perfect, Mr. Perfect, is 10 out of 10. And you walk away and say, this cannot be real. This cannot be true. I cannot believe I met someone who's scoring 10 out of 10 on everything. Chemistry, physical attraction, everything's 10 out of 10. So you know what? You do your due research. You know what you do? You interview people who've known this girl, this boy, since childhood. Extended family, teachers, references galore. And you're getting score 10 out of 10 on every item. Will you marry this person, yes or no? Can we say Mazel Tov, yes or no? Yes! I hope. Think about it. Would you marry this person, yes or no? I mean, you can't. And let's say you've got slight hesitation. I said slight hesitation over here. Imagine you're slightly hesitant because there's something that you haven't yet found out you want to clarify about this person. So add that item to your list and go on another date, and let's just pretend with me for a few moments. You meet the person again, and he scores 10 out of 10 on this item. Will you marry this person, yes or no? I was once giving a dating workshop to 85 singles. There was like 42 boys, 43 girls, in the opposite sides of the room. And we're going through the list of all the things we're looking for. And this is the question I posed to them. If you meet someone who's got everything on the list, everything, and it's 10 out of 10, and you do your diligent research, and everyone else is telling you it's 10 out of 10, will you marry this person, yes or no? So one guy said no. I said, why not? He said, well, I have to click. So I told him, fix your click. So let's say you fixed, whatever's not clicking is fixed, and it's a 10 out of 10. Will you marry this person, yes or no? Any hesitation? Will you marry this person, yes or no? Yes! Okay. Now comes the real question. Because you have found a person that scored 10 out of 10 on everything on that list, does that equal a happy marriage? Yes or no?
No.
Why not? Why not? Well, it's not only your perception, but everyone else seems to be telling you, yes, he, she is 10 out of 10 on all these items. And let's just say that's accurate. Why is that not a guarantee to have marriage? It's definitely a good fighting chance, but why is it not a guarantee?
Because it's not about the things on that list, it's about your goal. It's not about the list, really.
It's not really about the list because... Yeah? Why?
Change.
See, we get married. Here's what... Let me give you an example. This is a true example. True example. Man marries woman. One of the things he was attracted to her for was that she was abused by her father, molested by her father in childhood. She stopped having a relationship with her father from the age of 12, 13. She hasn't spoken to him in 10 years. She's 23. She has her own business. She has 5 employees. She is doing very well financially and has a very strong self-esteem. He is so enamored by her perseverance, her strength of character, that what he really loves about her is this incredible independence that she has, despite what she's been through. And they get married. 6 months later, her father dies, and she falls into a depression. And he says, what's going on? You haven't spoken to the man in the past 10 years. He was a sick person. So what are you depressed about? And you know what her answer was? Astonishing. Her answer was the following. I don't think you realize, as I didn't myself, that for the past 10 years, I was deeply yearning, craving for a healing relationship. And now that he's gone, my only father that I will ever have never had a chance to say sorry and mean it, and now I feel I'll never be able to heal myself. Could he have possibly anticipated this? You see, what I'm saying is the following. Even when we score 10 out of 10 and we get married, happily, this is the right person, surely, and there's nothing missing. Even in the best possible scenario, the person we marry does not equal the person we stay married to, because different changes will surface, situations, circumstances that we don't control. And now what will count is not how similar and less different we are, but how we respond to the differences. How strong and supportive will we be of those differences? There are many stories of this type. One last example. Man marries woman, true story. Man marries woman, she is enamored by security. She loves security, that's what matters the most to her. This man has had the same job for 15 years, and he is holding a very high position in the corporate ladder, and she loves this man. Besides, there's other virtues too, but she really goes to the fact that he's financially secure. Within a year, the company is downsized and he loses his job. And months searching for another job, he just can't start at the bottom again. He's worked himself away. 15 years is real staying power. And guess what happens? She gets really upset. Why? Because one of the things she was most attracted to was the fact he had staying power. This is not his fault. So many differences can happen. We could have similar goals, or same, similar values, or the same, in how we want to raise our children. And we've discussed it thoroughly. And guess what happens when the child is born?
Change.
Is it possible we'll both agree on how to discipline this particular child? Is it possible we could have twins, and these two kids are not the same personality, and for some reason you have a deep affinity to one of them, and I have a deeper affinity to the other, and both have different methods of how to raise each one of these kids? True or false? Could happen easily. Who we marry, and it's hard to swallow this, but it will make life a lot easier if I could really understand this. Who I marry is less important, a whole lot less important, than who am I going to be in that marriage. Because if I try to force you to change, good luck! Do you know anybody who successfully changed their spouse by trying to change them? I'll make the question much easier. Do you know anybody in world history that succeeded in changing their spouse by trying to change them? Never happened. The only person I'm capable of changing is me. So I do agree, look for the best possible foundational base of similarity and values and goals, but the most important person I need to focus on is who am I becoming in the dating process? Am I becoming more sensitive, more giving, more understanding, more empathic, more loving, more appreciative, more grateful? That's what's really going to count, because those are the ingredients that when we do, not if, when we do discover differences, how will we get along with those differences? Or will it be using sarcasm, with put-downs? Will it be comparisons? You're just like your mother! No, not you personally, I'm sorry. And we start comparing each other to other members of the extended family. When I use sharp words, sarcasm, put-downs, comparison, God forbid, insults, that's the beginning of the end. It's how I respond to the differences that's going to count, not the differences. Yes, madam. A little louder, sorry.
Most people are on their best behaviour when they're dating. So they sort of, I wouldn't say they necessarily lie.
Right.
They don't.
Yeah, I want to sell the best in me.
True representation of who they are. They tend to sort of hide behind a mask and, you know, flower everything up. And it's only later on you get to sort of see the real person. But if that person's constantly growing with that also going on, the HR going on as well, how do you know who the real person is?
Excellent question. You know, I would say in the dating process, you definitely do not want to make a complete commitment till you feel comfortable that you've seen them in very familiar surroundings, especially a Shabbos table with their family, or how they get along with their siblings, with their mum, with their dad. Now, it may be, you might argue that's an unfair place to judge them because they're being their real selves. But I'm here to say that if I don't have a full confidence that this person is really as good as she appears, because they're assumably on their best behavior, then I want to see them when their guard is down. The most common situation is either immediate family, or in situations where you've met them enough times to see them in places and circumstances where you see them squeezed by different and difficult people. It can be as simple as a run-in with a waiter or waitress at the or a cashier who's a bit blunt, and you see how they respond. That's what you really want to look for. If you're not comfortable with, is this person just on his best behavior, or is this really the real him? Yes, madam.
How do you handle having expectations then towards people if every time they're not met you just say, well, I'm going to go with it? Like, if you expect to have security in a relationship, or if you expect your spouse to have, like, be perseverant, then, like, are you supposed to post that expectation?
I can base my expectations on a track record. If this person has a track record of staying power in the job, this person has a track record of financial responsibility, that's a fair expectation. Does that mean that I should not expect that they might make a mistake, a financial mistake, and lose a lot of money on one investment? And you ask, you know, it's interesting, Harvard has a report on multimillionaires, and the claim is that 86% of multimillionaires became that way because they failed the most times in business. Listen carefully. I should expect, if a person has a track record in business, to do well. But what I should also expect is the norm. And what's the norm? There will be ups and there will be downs. That is the norm. That's the norm in marriage, that's the norm in raising children. To expect there will be ups and downs. So even though you want to base your expectations on the track record that they've already established, I should also have a, if you like, amendment that says, and I expect the unexpected. I expect there to be changes. And then, who's the most important person in this formula? Them, who might be making the change, or me in how I will handle that change? I have to expect strength in myself. Do I have the strength to handle the unexpected? I may not know the answer to that till it's happened, but based on my track record of how I deal with frustration, irritation, differences, and difficult people, how confident am I that even with the unexpected, I'm going to persevere? I'm not going to let go. I'm not going to judge this person for that financial loss. I'll support him. I'll go through this together. We're going to make it. We're going to get it back. Yeah? Okay. Let me move on to number four. Thou shalt ask domino questions. Ask questions that reveal and unfold more information about what the person likes the most. The more you will find out much more about the person you're meeting when you get them talking about what they're most passionate about, what they enjoy and love the most. It can be sports, it can be pets, it can be food, it can be an ideal. Get them speaking about what they're most passionate. Why? Why is that important? And then domino questions means keep asking more questions because you're genuinely interested in trying to understand what makes this person tick. What's the purpose of going in this direction? What will you reveal to yourself about the other person by asking them questions that lead them to talk about what they love the most? Any suggestions?
Their interests.
And what's that telling you about their personality? Once they start talking about what interests them the most, what do you do? What do you like doing the most in your spare time? What's your favorite hobby? Oh, that's interesting. I don't know anyone who's into collecting dinosaurs. Tell me more about it. Whatever it is, by showing genuine interest, it doesn't mean you're fascinated by that particular item. You don't have to agree to that choice of hobby. But the fact that you are asking to have them explain what is it that makes them so interested, enjoy it so much, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think they'll shut down or they'll reveal more? They're going to reveal more. You want them to be honest to the core about what they love the most. Because once you have identified what they love the most and how they are passionate about it, then you're touching them on a very powerful piece. And what is that? What do we all crave the most?
Pleasure.
Recognition.
Of?
About in a word.
When I feel someone genuinely understands or wants to understand my inner self, what gets me excited the most, you are touching a person on the deepest level, which is the craving of their soul, so to speak, what they are most emotionally invested in. So when you ask Domino questions about, that's an interesting career, what led you to that? And help them describe, was it really an intelligent reason why they chose that career? Or was it because that was popular and they wanted to go into the same department as some of their friends who were going for the same type of degree? What really made them go for that? Was it a deeply intelligent choice? What was the basis of it? You will help them reveal to you about themselves, which is what you really want. It's not manipulation. It's simply a shortcut to discover what makes them tick. For example, our sages tell us in Ethics of Our Fathers, in chapter 4, paragraph 1, who is the one that gets the most respect? Eizehu mechubad. Who gets the most appreciation? And the answer they give is?
The most humble.
Hamechabed, the one who gives the most appreciation to others. If you want to know who gets the most love, appreciation, honor, respect, what's the answer? The one who gives the most respect, honor, appreciation to others. Those people that you identify in your youth, elementary, high school, college and beyond, that you can identify appreciated you the most, and you feel love for them, what is that love based upon? Because the appreciation they have for you. And what was the you part that they appreciated? Usually it's not surface. Usually it's something that's much deeper than just the surface. Usually it's not the shape of your body. It's not just your financial assets, your social status. It's usually much deeper than that. They appreciated real virtues in your personality. And because they were able to identify that, you felt loved by that person. The people who get the most love in this world are the ones that love the most, that look for reasons that will cause people to love them. Because we're looking for the virtues that turn us on, that make us feel good about ourselves. Is this making sense? Number 5, thou shalt not expect a perfect match. And this brings us to the point that I was making a bit earlier. Who I marry is not nearly as important as how I respect that person, how I will love that person, how I will appreciate that person, even with the differences. Because when, not if, when the differences will surface, and they will, I'm not saying that to frighten anyone, when the differences surface, how will we handle those differences? How will we respond to those differences? I was recently speaking in Kutcher's, I think I mentioned this magazine, right? I was speaking in Kutcher's, it's a country club. Now it's much more for the elderly, in the Catskills, that's upstate New York. And there were about 400 people in the audience, average age was about 107. But actually, I think I mentioned to you, there was a lady there, 104 years old. So I asked her, what's the most special part of being your age? She said, no peer pressure. So, there are about 400 people in the audience, and I asked them, you know what, in the average age I suggested was about 50. The lady was very happy with that. There were people in that audience really, there's one man who's 67 years married. You know, it's amazing. Marriage is not a word, it's a sentence. So this man, never mind. This man is still on, it's having fun. So here, this man was married 67 years. There are people in that audience who've been through the First and Second World War. They've seen life, they've seen death. And I asked him a simple question. The question I asked you. But here was the question. 400 people in that room times 50 years, the average age is really much more, but never, let's call it 50, is 20,000. In your 20,000 years, 20,000 years of accumulative life experience, how many people would you say, you know, whose lives are enriched because they're the most similar and least different? They're happy in their marriage because they're the most similar and least different. They have love in their relationship because they're most similar and least different. Or, is it number two, it's not how similar and least different we are that will equal a happy marriage, loving marriage, peace in the home, but it's how well we respond to the differences. How well we get along with the differences. How many people said, number one, zero, 20,000 years of accumulative life experience. Not one person said, you know what life is about? Compatibility, being the same, being less different. Every single one in that audience said, you know what really matters? How we respond to the differences. That's something that usually takes me 30 or 40 years to figure out. That appreciating you with your differences and not start counting what I don't like about you, that starts to remove me from the real love formula, which we're going to look at later tonight, and understand that love and happiness in a marriage is based about counting what's good in the other person. Finding what's good in the other person. Not just looking. Finding what's good in the other person. And that becomes the real foundation. The honest virtues that are already in the other person that we list for ourselves and verbalize in the marriage. And if we don't make time to tell each other how important our marriage is, and God forbid fall apart, it's only a matter of time before I start noticing what I don't like about you. And there's plenty of that. That's going to happen in every relationship. How similar and less different is not what matters. What really matters is how I keep pumping in my own mind the inventory of the good that's already in you. And remind myself that's the real you. So that when, not if, when the differences surface, how strong will my base, the foundation that I've created in my mind about who you really are, how pronounced is that? Or have I listed and kept inventory of all the things I don't like about you, so that when differences surface, we start falling apart. And then forget, about 3 years ago, my wife and I were going further and further apart. I was holding 2.5 jobs. My wife was like carpooling 6 times a day. Just no time for each other. So we sat down and said, this is ridiculous. We have to make time. If we don't make time to show that we're there for each other, we're going to spend time together and verbalize all things we love and committed to in the marriage in the first place, it's just not going to happen. So we made a commitment that every single week we'll go out twice every week. And the last 3 years, never missed once. I got Mondays, she goes up Thursdays. No, but seriously, if we don't make time to be with each other, and if necessary, verbalize. I actually have a custom every Friday night and Shabbat meal on the daytime. We have a custom, my family, we go around the room, and every single person, myself, my wife included, each of the children has to say one thing that they feel grateful to God for this week. Something that's good that happened to them, or something they feel grateful for. It's amazing, especially children, what they'll come up with. And many times guests have commented that they, at first it feels like very false, but after they see how one can be genuinely appreciative and grateful and verbalize it, it becomes much easier to start speaking about what I'm grateful for in my life. Do you know there's a card company called Hallmark. Familiar? Yeah. Isn't that amazing? I could spend 3 hours looking for a card that says thank you! Because I can't somehow say it myself! What? How did it, a multi-billion days of the year. Why? What's happened over here? You see, it should be meaningless. It should be meaningless. Why do I have to remind significant people in my life about my appreciation for them? And the answer, sadly, is because I'm not communicating it successfully the rest of the time. So many a time, a person will be appeased that, oh, you really do think about me. Oh, you remembered my anniversary. Or you remembered my birthday. I'm not saying you shouldn't buy that card. But what I am saying is that there's an industry that's built upon the assumption that I am not a thank-you-er nearly as much as I am in finding fault, in noticing what's wrong. And who I am in the marriage, in terms of gratitude, appreciation, giving, understanding, empathy, love, respect, loyalty, devotion, there's a long list! Those are the ingredients that will equal a long-term happy relationship. And that's what I'm constantly really looking for. There's a statement in our sages, same ethics of our fathers, and same chapter 1, chapter 4, paragraph 1. And, no, it's not there, I'm sorry. It's in chapter 1, paragraph 16, I believe. It says, Asei lecha rav, make for yourself a teacher. Ukanei lecha chaver, even be willing to spend money in a friendship. And the third item is, v'havidan et kol adam lechaschut, and judge everyone favorably. Interpret other people's human frailties in a favorable way. What's number 3 got to do with the first two? The first two were, find yourself a teacher, a mentor. Number 2, be willing to spend money on friendship. Friendship is very valuable. Be willing to invest in it. Number 3, judge everyone favorably. Why? Because if I'm looking for a perfect mentor, a teacher who will never mess up in being insensitive to me, if I'm looking for a friend that will never mess up in their loyalty to me as a friend, how long will I be looking? Forever! Because they don't exist! We're human! And so the third statement is, incorporate the expectation that people will do and say things not to my expectations and standards. And what I need to learn is not to judge quickly against my expectation of you, but rather clarify in my own mind and ask, do I really have all the information I need to be absolutely certain that my negative judgment of you is totally accurate? Or is it possible that if I were to know how you were raised, how your parents brought you up, that I would change my judgment to compassion? Is that possible? Is it possible if I were to really know all the variables that came before the action you did that hurt me, or I think hurt me, if I were to know what was behind what you said or did, is it possible I would change my perception of you? And so I'm being encouraged that whoever I'm in a relationship with, don't be fixated on the unfair expectations that they cannot make any mistakes. Because it's not who I marry that's important as much as who I am. And I always look at myself as much as I possibly can in a nice light. I need to do that with you. I should not be holding you to an unfair standard. We're told, our sages tell us, in the first year of marriage, a husband is not allowed to go on a business trip out of town without his wife's consent. Why is that? The concept is, there's other things a Jewish husband is not allowed to do in the first year of marriage. He's not allowed to go to the army. Why? Because the idea is that a person must invest in that first year, crucial year, first year intimacy. Not just physical intimacy, emotional intimacy, being honest about each other, so that as many of the differences that will surface, we start to learn how to handle those differences. For many of us, rabbis more concurrently tell us, that first year, Shana Rishona is called, lasts nowadays about 15 years. I'm not sure if it's that fast, but it's probably accurate, 10 to 15 years. It takes that long to learn how to get along with the differences. I will close on the last few very quickly. Number 6, thou shalt be a righteous person on every day. What does that mean? I'm not here to judge and hurt you. That even if I don't like you, either because of the physical attraction, or your personality, or your background, or whatever else it is, my duty on a date is to be as kind and sensitive, gracious and appreciative as I possibly can. Because it's important that I become the best I can become, even though I'm in now the next 3 hours, I cannot believe I'm going to be 3 hours with this person. No, my duty is to be kind, considerate, and appreciative, even though I know from the first second, oh my God, who set me up with him? I would say, on every date, practice being kind. And one of the ways to do that is the simple power of a smile. Because what does a smile actually say to another person? Any suggestions?
I'm happy
that...
That
you are here with me. You exist in my life. I'm happy you exist. That's a very powerful statement. Just our facial expression alone. Number 7. Got 2 minutes, Rabbi?
2.
Yeah, okay. 2 minutes for last week. Number 7. Thou shalt not look at Calvin Klein ads. Don't believe the media's definition of love. We're going to reserve on exploring this for the next presentation. The media has me wired to judge you based on intrinsic value or external value. Which is it? It's all external. The media wants me to believe that who you really are is your car, your clothes, the shape of your body, how you work out, your financial status, your social status, which postal code you live in, the size of your home, and all that's external. I'm not decrying, I'm not saying that's unimportant and insignificant. But what we know that really counts in a long-term marriage, long-term relationship, is all the internal ingredients that we're truly looking for. So thou shalt not look at Calvin Klein ads. Number 8, thou shalt not focus on the external image of my date. True, physical attraction has to be there. But I would say if there's a minimal, what in Hebrew is called chen, a certain invisible connection that you see on the face, there's a person in their facial expression, their shine of their smile, that is a reflection of their personality. If there's at least the minimum pain, that invisible connection, that even if the rest of the features are not that amazing, the person will probably grow on you. Give them a second chance, if necessary even a third chance. That their smile, their face, their features will grow on us because they are only a reflection of the inside. Give the inside a chance to come outside. Number 9, for clarity, you might want to write down this phone number. Call for help 1-800-ALMIGHTY. Please, God, give me clarity! This is my 700th date in the past 4 weeks. Give me some clarity! What's happening in my life? Help me find what I'm really looking for. Help me know what I'm looking for in myself, in the person I'm looking for. Speak to God and ask him for help along the way. And number 10, thou shalt not give up. Persevere, don't give up. Our sages tell us in tractate Moed Katan that every single day there's a heavenly voice that says so and so is destined to marry so and so. The question that's asked, why does it have to say it every day? Just say it once. Why does it have to come out every day? And the answer is because there are many times I might give up and say, you know, I'm never going to marry you. I'm never going to work. And I might give up. And therefore, we're told that heavenly voice declares every single day it's waiting for the exact moment when so-and-so will be married to so-and-so. Thank you for your patience.